The surviving Boston Marathon bombing suspect was arraigned in his hospital room yesterday and charged with using a weapon of mass destruction to kill. We're not going to focus on his legal rights so much since that was covered yesterday during At Issue with John Munson, but we'll get a brief reaction from our guest as we discuss our civil liberties in the wake of this latest terrorist attack, especially when it comes to the plans in some communities to install more surveillance cameras. Does the use of these surveillance cameras bother you or not so much? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 23rd. The city of Madison says it plans to install about 100 additional surveillance cameras across town. Police say the cameras can help solve crimes, as illustrated by the Boston Marathon bombing investigation, while others say they could intrude on our privacy. What do you say? What questions or concerns do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you have any problems with surveillance cameras? Have you changed your mind at all about this issue since the Boston bombings? Let me welcome our guests. Our guest is Donald Downs, a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for joining us. As I mentioned, we'll focus on the surveillance camera angle during this hour, but I did want to see if you had any reaction to the news from yesterday that the bombing suspect was arraigned in his hospital room and at that time read his Miranda rights, apparently, and he will be treated as a civilian, as a U.S. citizen in our civilian criminal justice system, and not treated as an enemy combatant.
Right. Well, the administration has decided that they're going to treat him as a regular kind of criminal, sort of pursuant to the policy that they've been pushing for, the last few years. So that's really not surprising. What they could have done was treat him as an enemy combatant just for interrogation purposes and then move him over to the criminal justice system. You could use what he said in the enemy combatant context in the criminal trial, but they have a lot of evidence on him anyway. So I don't think anything would have been lost by treating him both ways.
Yeah, and they did not read him his Miranda rights at first, citing some sort of emergency clause.
Right, yeah, it's called the public safety exception from a 1984 Supreme Court decision. But that was a case where a guy was in a grocery store, I think it was, and he had robbed it, and they caught him with his holster without a gun in it. And so they had a concern there was a live gun someplace in the store, so they asked him where it was, and he told them. So you're talking about a very small window there. Applying that concept to interrogating somebody for a long time just doesn't really work.
Yeah, but saying that there could have been some bombs still somewhere.
Right. So, you know, the question is, can you expand that 1984 case to a terrorist kind of context? And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you can. The courts haven't decided that yet.
Well, there is a lot of evidence for convicting this Boston Marathon bomber just based on surveillance camera video. I guess I don't know. I didn't realize that there were so many. I mean, I didn't realize they were in as much use as they are in this country.
It's tremendous.
They're everywhere.
Well, going back to your original question you posed for the listeners, do they help us catch criminals? Yes. Are they a potential threat to our privacy? Yes. That's the dilemma. It goes both ways.
Yeah. Well, how big a role did the surveillance video in the Boston Marathon bombing play in the apprehension of these suspects?
Well, apparently it played a big role because they had pictures of them they showed to people. So it was pretty important. And, you know, these cameras are everywhere. London has 400,000, I just read this morning. And Chicago has 30,000. So, and they're probably going to have more. And, you know, they're there for a variety of purposes, one of which is to, for traffic reasons, at, you know, yellow lights. And as you know, Chicago is really spec for cash. So they're using them partly for that reason. You know, plus just general surveillance. And, you know, Chicago has a crime problem, too.
Yeah, in the news last week, the city of Madison is going to add about 100 more cameras around town, including at water wells and bus transfer centers. This is on top of 200 cameras already downtown. Should we expect to hear about more cities beefing up their cameras following the events of last week?
Well, I don't think there's any question that's going to happen. You have, you know, Mayor Bloomberg in New York talking about adding to the cameras there, and they have a lot already. And where this is really taking place in Boston, it was more the private cameras from various business establishments that they used, and those have been out there for a long time. And so, in some ways, the government is just sort of catching up on this trend, which has been in place for quite a while. So the technology's there, and maybe we can talk about the Fourth Amendment issues with that. I'm sure you'll be asking me that. Yeah. Because they're pretty significant. And right now, there really is no Fourth Amendment law restricting them.
Well, and the businesses put these up there for what reason?
Just for surveillance for themselves in case someone robs them or something like that. So, you know, they have their own concerns about crime. You know, maybe shoplifting, too. But, you know, you go to any major store in town, you're going to see surveillance cameras. And they're both outside, inside. They have surveillance cameras at, ATM machines and things like that. So some listeners might be surprised to learn, you know, if you want to call it Big Brother, whatever you want to call it, it's already here to some extent.
Yeah. So they didn't prevent the crime, though, did they?
No. But apparently there's technology out there that is still in its fairly early stages. It's going to get more sophisticated that can sort of trigger an alarm if someone leaves a package somewhere. I mean, they have the software to be able to do that. So the issue of prevention, there are really two dimensions of dimension. One is video cameras can actually sort of see someone leaving something and then alert authorities. And the other is just people knowing that they're there, there might be a larger deterrent effect.
Yeah. It was funny. There was a column in the Wisconsin State Journal regarding the city of Madison's announcement that it's going to be adding 100 more cameras around town. And the columnist was kind of wondering, where's the outrage? Here, former activist, hippie protester, Mayor Paul Soglin was all for it.
Right, right. Well, you know, he's the mayor now. And but yeah, I think people have been fairly complacent about this kind of thing. Now, you know, the ACLU has taken numerous cases around the country and made it more difficult, at least politically, and in some cases, like in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right next to Boston. Cambridge had a vote a while ago as to whether or not to put up such cameras, and because of the ACLU's involvement, they decided not to.
Yeah, and what is the concern? I don't think I'm doing anything wrong when I'm walking down the street, so I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's just a lot of people feel that it's an invasion of their privacy, that the state can watch them while they go about their normal affairs out there. Now, maybe segueing into the Fourth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment jurisprudence has always held that something that you expose to the public, it's called, you know, public exposure or open fields exception to the Fourth Amendment. Once you've exposed something to the public eye, then you no longer have what they call a reasonable expectation of privacy, which means that the Fourth Amendment is not in play. And that also applies to technology that is in common use. There's been a lot of Fourth Amendment cases involving somewhat unusual technology, like, you know, high-powered cameras and things like that. And with a couple exceptions we can talk about, the Supreme Court has ruled that as long as a technology is in common use, then we take it as part of our public experience. And there, if someone can see you through, say, a camera in public, there is no Fourth Amendment right to not have that happen.
Yeah, so you can't protest in court
right.
Nobody should have
right.
Watched me do that drug transaction.
Right. And there's a couple exceptions. 2001, there's a thermal imaging device, which was used, I think, in the Boston case to see the body outline of that suspect underneath the canvas. Police use thermal imaging to detect, among other things, heat coming out of places. So they suspected a guy was growing marijuana in his house, and they put the thermal imaging device outside the house, and they were able to tell that there was more heat coming out of the house than is normal. That gave them probable cause then to get a warrant and go inside the house. And the Supreme Court, 5-4, Justice Scalia, writing the majority opinion, he's actually been pretty good on Fourth Amendment issues. He ruled that this is not a technology in common use, thermal imaging devices, and therefore it was an intrusion into the privacy of the home, even though they were outside the home when they got the heat, and that therefore they had to get a warrant even to use that thermal imaging device directed at the house.
Yeah, that does seem like that's a different line to cross to me.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, once if it gets in common use, then that could change.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And sort of the same thing with the GPS devices. Last year, they attached a GPS device to a guy's pickup truck and followed him intensively for a couple of weeks, and he was a drug dealer. And the court came to a similar conclusion there. They used a different rationale. That was more of a physical trespass rationale, which is a more traditional Fourth Amendment issue, by physically trespassing onto his truck and then following him. But most other cases where they've had like high-powered cameras looking into someone's backyard that's exposed to the public from up in the air, airplane, people looking down from helicopters, courts have held that that's not Fourth Amendment because it's open to public view.
Yeah. Do we know some who don't want more surveillance cameras are worrying about their privacy being invaded? Do we know what the government, or for that matter, I guess the businesses, what they are doing with all the videos and photos that are being collected?
Yeah, I don't think we know very much about it. At least I haven't come across any information to that effect. What you can do, and this happened with electronic eavesdropping, in around 1920, the Supreme Court had a case where police were using electronic eavesdropping to see what's going on in someone's apartment, and they even had it through into the bedroom. And the court said this was not a Fourth Amendment issue because when the Fourth Amendment was passed, there was no electronics. So, very narrow original intent kind of argument. But then 40-some years later, the Supreme Court changed that doctrine in a case involving a conversation in a public telephone booth. And the court held that when you go to a public telephone booth, it's a private conversation, you have an expectation of privacy. So they now, what they do, the Fourth Amendment now keeps up with the technology if it can. Well, in addition to that, Congress in the 1930s and then the 1960s passed laws about electronic eavesdropping. So Congress can, so in other words, to get a warrant to engage in electronic eavesdropping, you'd have to go through more hoops than you would normally without that legislation. It sort of adds to the Fourth Amendment. And the Congress could do that here too, with this kind of stuff. They could, create certain kinds of limits to it to try to balance security and privacy. The difference is that the acts in the 1930s and 1960s involved intrusions into the home and intrusions into a private realm. Now we're talking about surveillance out there in the public where the court has never held that you have a right, an expectation of privacy. So it would be a different kind of law. I'm not sure how they could do it.
We're talking about the pros and cons of surveillance cameras and related issues with Donald Downs, professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Talking about this issue as cities, including the city of Madison, are planning to install more surveillance cameras around town. Police say that these cameras help solve crimes, and others are fear that they could intrude on our privacy rights. What do you think? What questions do you have? Do you support the use of more surveillance cameras in your community? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking the weather forecast for today. It's going to be cloudy and cool with scattered light rain, maybe some heavy snow. Indeed, a winter storm warning remains in effect until 10 o'clock this morning for far northern and northwest Wisconsin, including Bayfield County, with an additional inch or two of snow on top of the, dozen inches of snow already in some spots before 10 o'clock this morning. We can expect highs today, for the most part, statewide in the 40s. And coming up after 8 o'clock, it's another edition of On Your Money, and our financial planner, Kevin McKinley, will continue his April series on housing advice coming up during On Your Money. Right now, we are talking with Donald Downs, a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison, about surveillance cameras and privacy issues. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Jimmy in Milwaukee next. Hello, Jimmy. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. What I want to say is I don't think there is an expectation of privacy for anybody who is walking in a public street. If there's no cameras, people are still going to see them. People are still going to see what they're doing. And other businesses are also going to, chances are going to have surveillance cameras for their stores, and they're going to be on the surveillance camera. City of Madison is not going to be putting cameras inside people's homes. If anybody wants privacy, they can simply go to their private land or private property or inside their home or anything like that. But when people are walking into the street, they just simply cannot expect any privacy.
Hmm? Professor Downs?
Well, that's exactly how the Supreme Court has looked at it over the years. And from a Fourth Amendment perspective, that is the law. And there's some logic in what the caller said. The issue is just whether or not at some point that the extent is, does quantity make a difference in terms of quality, that you can be seen by the state and recorded and held, keep that recording for a long time just going out into public. But that's really, I think, a matter of a personal taste and personal feeling. Maybe the larger concern about the extent of state power, which the caller hasn't addressed. But in terms of where the law stands right now, and in terms of the way a lot of people feel, that's the caller's consistent with the law right now.
Mm. Lynette on Facebook writes, "We have had our right to privacy stripped over the past decade. It just keeps getting worse and worse. I thought 1984 was fiction when I read it. It wasn't supposed to end up a true story." I don't know. Does she have a point?
Well, she's right about how the privacy that we had. I mean, the first caller talked about the right to privacy, and do you really have a right to privacy once you walk out into the public realm? That's one thing. But above and beyond the right to it, just in terms of our sort of expectation of it or the way it's been in the past, clearly it's been stripped away without any question. And, look at, you go on Facebook, which is a voluntary act, right? You don't have to go on Facebook. But when you do, when you go into social media, you've lost a lot of privacy right there. So in a way, we've surrendered it ourselves. And also, it's also happened to us.
Hey, can somebody take a picture of me on the walking down State Street, I don't know, doing something embarrassing and post that on Facebook?
Well, that's an interesting question. And there have been some torts, private lawsuits about invasions of privacy. But if they take place in the public realm, then it's a lot harder to win a lawsuit.
Yeah. I mean, that happened a lot, too, after the Boston Marathon. A lot of private cell phones, the photos and videos taken there.
Forgot about our cell phone. I'm sitting here with my iPhone on the table right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, we could. So it's a complicated question, isn't it? Because it's not just the government.
Yeah. Well, I guess some could say, hey, we've got these. Everybody has their own surveillance camera on them 24/7. Yeah. Do we really need the government setting up all these cameras?
Yeah. Well, the government will put them in more strategic spots, though, I think, too, if they go down that way. But I had a thought I was going to make, and I forgot what it was.
That's right. We have other callers. Jim in Chippewa Falls is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hello. I guess I could point out that my background, I've been working with video since there was video, probably about 30 years now, and there isn't a whole lot of videotape anymore. It's all digital and records to hard drive.
Right.
The hard drive, depending on the size of the hard drive, which actually is the problem, usually the civil, the city types of surveillance cameras will actually rewrite over what there is after about a week or up to maybe even a month if you have a lot of space. So, and there's no one actually sitting there watching the screens. It is for after-the-fact type of system where you can follow where the person came from. You can follow it through to where they went. And it's basically checking out crime or where the perp is and who he is after the fact and not actually trying to stop things ahead of the time.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much. Reaction?
I think that's an interesting point. And, no one's going to sit there and just watch this stuff all day, right? I mean, they're going to fall asleep within 10 minutes. So the question is how it can be used afterwards. And a similar issue has come up with in the war on terror, or the reaction to terrorism, that you have computers that will flag or react to certain words that are used in emails and in various communications like that. And then that would, if the word is flagged, then they might look more deeply into that issue. But they don't even know who the person is until they go through three or four steps. Okay. And it's sort of the same thing here, that you can engage in a kind of surveillance without people really being watched. It's more after the fact, and it's more selective. there's another area, it's this thing, the thought I had before that I forgot, and it's come back to me, that when these cameras are used for example, getting people going through yellow lights, et cetera, or for speeding a little bit over the speed limit, we're losing a bit of our sort of the freedom we have when, you know, just going rolling through a yellow light too much can automatically get you a ticket without a police officer being there. Yeah. It's sort of making us have to you know, conform to the letter of the law every second. And yet the law is somewhat flexible and, you know, no one's perfect. And so I just sort of feel that there's a freedom issue here above and beyond just sort of the privacy issue. Mm. And if you flag these things after the fact, that doesn't necessarily make it better for the freedom issue, because you can still get penalized for doing something that's a minor infraction. And with cities so strapped for cash now, you know, in Chicago, a classic example, I mean, Illinois makes Greece look solvent, that are we going to end up just using these devices to get money out of the citizenry, which will also restrict their liberty to you know, their freedom in the long run.
Now let's take one quick call from Kaylee in Superior. Hello, Kaylee.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have two quick things. First of all, I wanted to say that it seems like we are headed this direction, that these things are going to happen regardless of what we do, and that maybe we'll save ourselves some time and some money by just kind of embracing it rather than fighting it. And also, I was wondering if you could address sort of the paranoia issue that comes along with these things that immediately seem to make people just cringe, and, you know, like, I know it's opening up a can of worms, but, you know, like GMOs and nuclear power and all these things that we initially just shy away from, and that maybe we need to kind of embrace the future and embrace the technology and put more money into doing it right as opposed to, you know, fighting it and having it squeeze its way through.
Thank you, Kaylee. We're going to have Professor Downs pick up on that point, those points, after we check the news. We don't have enough time for an adequate response, so we'll let him think about it during NPR News and Wisconsin Public Radio News, and then we'll be back. Talking with Donald Downs, Professor of Political Science, Law, and Journalism at UW-Madison, about the plans in some communities, like the city of Madison, to install more surveillance cameras. Does this bother you or not? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Do you support the use of surveillance cameras in your community or other U.S. cities? Do you feel safer knowing that they're around? Or do you feel uneasy being watched by Big Brother? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, April 23rd. After last week's Boston Marathon bombings, the city of Madison says it plans to install about 100 additional surveillance cameras around town. Police say that these cameras help solve crimes. Others say they could intrude on our privacy rights. We are talking with a guest expert about the arguments on both sides and welcoming your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Donald Downs. He's a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Just before news time, we heard from a caller, Kaylee, who said, why don't we just embrace this and let's get it done right instead of just arguing and debating this forever. What your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, from a realistic perspective, she's got a good point. It's out there already. It's only going to grow. It's not for no other reason than the private sector doing it. And, you know, there are concerns about changes in terrorism, moving toward more homegrown forms of terrorism and moving toward soft targets. Which has been, they've been talking about that for years now, and it seems at least maybe this is starting to happen. So embrace it. That's sort of what happened with electronic eavesdropping in the 1930s when Congress passed the first bill involving that kind of stuff. And have good legislation that says, okay, you use it, but here's the way you have to use it. Here's what you can't do it for. And that's, I think, you know, maybe the wisest approach when all is said and done. Mm-hmm. You accept it. But then you say, yeah, but there's some problems with it, and there's privacy concerns, so let's restrict it in a rational way at the same time that we allow it.
And do you have any comments on the paranoia aspect of her comment that we, I guess, think Big Brother's out to get us?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a little paranoia might be maybe I'll call it vigilance, mm-hmm. in to protect liberty concerns. I think that's a constitutional value. Even you don't want it to become paranoia. You want sort of due distrust or vigilance to stay there rather than becoming paranoia.
Hmm. Why did you mentioned in our first half hour that the ACLU objected to surveillance cameras in Cambridge and did succeed in not having them installed?
Yeah, that's what I read in the newspaper yesterday, and they've been less successful elsewhere. But they show that if you want to deal with this, let's deal with it in a political way. It's not going to happen constitutionally, I don't think, to a very significant extent. So let's work it out in terms of policy. Now, you know, then the question is, do you do better policy by having one side, you know, pro-surveillance, the other side sort of paranoid in a more adversarial way, or do you get minds sitting down at the table and working this out in the most rational way possible?
Yeah, and the ACLU argument for against the surveillance cameras in Cambridge was, again, just we don't need to take pictures of people walking around?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, it's basically a privacy issue, privacy concern.
Susan in Waukesha wonders, in her email, could drone surveillance ever be used for big public events like the Boston Marathon?
Yeah, probably will be. You already have drone sites around the country, and that's a big issue now. You know, using drones, police using drones, I know some people say that drones are tools of war, and they're appropriate when it comes to dealing with terrorism in areas where it's a real concern, and you definitely have a kind of battlefield situation. But when police start using that, then we're using the kind of, you know, the model of warfare and applying it to our domestic realm. But I suppose if you left drones purely to, you know, surveillance, that might be somewhat less of a concern. But again, it sort of symbolizes the new tensions that we're dealing with.
Yeah. You know, it seems different to me to have a surveillance camera on a telephone pole and a drone flying overhead.
But you've got them on helicopters and things like that. A lot of Fourth Amendment cases involving airplanes taking pictures of backyards and things like that.
That's right.
So that's already kind of happened, and we're talking now about ratcheting it up to another degree.
Let's go to Jim in Verona next. Hello, Jim.
Hello. I did a lot of surveillance and security design for the State Historical Society a few years back. One law that prohibited us from getting a lot of good data was that we could not record sound.
Right.
And sometimes the voice would be important. Is that still on, without being posted, I guess? So is that still the law?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, what's the diff?
And, well, you know, words are... We don't expose our words to the public in the same way. The case I talked about where they started saying there's a reasonable expectation of privacy to overturn that old electronic surveillance case. It's Katz versus U.S., 1967. Private conversation, though it was about crime, in a public telephone booth. And they had bugged the telephone. And the court held, sure, it's a public telephone booth, but the words you use in the phone, a reasonable person would expect those to be private, okay? Now, I always ask my class, if he turned his head and they had a lip reader, say the government had a lip reader with binoculars looking at his lips, there would not have been that kind of privacy because he would have physically exposed his lips to a common form of technology, the binoculars. But if he turns his back and speaks into the phone, court held there's an expectation of privacy there. So the difference between the content of words, which are really, you know, words represent our thoughts. So that really is more an invasion of thought than simply taking a picture of someone's face.
Yeah, so I'm standing on the street corner, you know, and I'm plotting a crime. Nobody can record my voice doing that.
Well, if it's interesting, if you're on a street corner, good question.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about that. That's one of those good student questions that you have to think for a second.
Yeah, and Jim, when you say you were doing this, was this for inside building security kind of thing?
Everything. And I worked from administration. I'm an electrical engineer.
So
when someone breaks into a building and you still cannot record their voice.
Oh, so when he was inside of a building for security reasons, couldn't record the voice.
Even a public building.
Yeah, I guess that's what
he's... Yeah. but again, that's by statute, not by Fourth Amendment, probably.
Yeah. All right, Jim, thanks very much. We will take one more call before our break. Bernie in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. In light of what recently happened in Boston, I can understand people wanting to have this, but I am opposed. There have been whistleblowers out of the National Security Agency that have talked about how our emails and phone conversations are being recorded and tapped without any sort of warrants or oversights since 9/11 and getting progressively worse. We have a drug war where I think that these cameras would be a bad thing. About 11 years or so ago, I was up at an event in Beaver Dam that was a pro-marijuana legalization event, and the police were filming everybody who was there. Mm-hmm. And I asked one of the police officers why they were doing that, and they simply said, this is what we were told to do. I think we're living in an increasing surveillance state, an increasing infringement of liberty state. And until those things are rectified, until the drug wars ended, until the FBI and NSA don't tap our emails and phone calls and don't infiltrate peace groups, et cetera, we really, unfortunately, are going to have to sacrifice the potential of safety because our liberties are just being too greatly eroded, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Professor Downs?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt there's a trend in that direction. And freedom of action is going to be more circumscribed, and I personally don't like the idea of the government just being able to look at me that closely when I go out in the public realm. I'd like to see a more specific reason why they're doing it, and that's sort of a larger Fourth Amendment kind of value, that the government needs a reason for doing what it's doing. It just can't do it without having a specific reason.
Yeah, that's because there is, again, I see a difference between a surveillance camera that's monitoring activities in a downtown area, high crime district or whatever, to try to deter or solve
right,
a crime.
Right.
But to be videotaping people at a demonstration or a rally of some sort, it sounds like they're almost trying to,
right.
identify the troublemakers.
Right, right. Well, back in the 1970s, Attorney General of the United States, Edward Leavy, established Justice Department guidelines for when federal officials could be able to do those kinds of things with First Amendment activities. And there's always been a debate whether or not the First Amendment requires that. But whether it did or not, he said the First Amendment values are at stake here. So he said that they needed to have a specific reason to do so and get a warrant to do so.
Mm.
And so there's at least get some restraint on the government. I'm not saying the government, there's some dangerous groups out there. At one time, it was argued that half the members of the Ku Klux Klan in the South were federal agents infiltrating. And the court has always held that if you invite someone into your group who happens to be a government agent, you voluntarily done so and taken the risk, so there's not a Fourth Amendment issue there. But I think the government needs to be constrained when it does so. It needs to have its own policies in effect.
Yeah. And do incidents like the bombing at the Boston Marathon or 9/11 make us generally more supportive of things like surveillance cameras, or we're more willing to give up privacy rights?
Yeah, I mean, the balance between liberty and security is always going to move security's way after we've had a crisis. But I think we sort of need to keep our heads. They handled the case pretty well. We don't know whether or not there's going to be a major rise of homegrown terrorists going after soft targets. If that happens, then, of course, we're going to sort of recalibrate the balance a little bit. But we need to do so rationally rather than in panic.
We're talking with Donald Downs, a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison, about our privacy rights and the plans in some communities, like the city of Madison, to install more surveillance cameras. Are you okay with surveillance cameras in your community? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 11 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 23rd. It's another edition of On Your Money coming up after 8 o'clock. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will have more information and advice on housing issues, buying or selling a home, and the like, coming up after 8 o'clock. We are talking about surveillance cameras and our privacy rights and welcoming your questions and views on this. Our guest is Donald Downs, professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Let me ask you briefly, Professor Downs, before we go to more calls on surveillance cameras. A lot of people were concerned about the actual capture or the attempted capture of the suspects in the bombing, the Boston Marathon bombing, in that, for instance, on Friday, when they're looking for the surviving suspect, they pretty much told people in the Boston area to stay inside, don't answer your door unless there's a police officer there. And I think they said, we're going to come into your house and search for bombs or this suspect.
Wow. Yeah, I see. I'm sort of uncomfortable in two ways about that. I mean, one is, and again, not being there, not seeing the actual situation. I'm like, this is Monday morning quarterback on my part. But it did seem like an overreaction, at least from where I was sitting, that looked a little bit panicky, which always sort of concerns me. But, you know, I acknowledge not being there.
Right. Easy to say that. But there are laws on the books that would allow our government to do this type of thing.
Well, if you have a real emergency, it's called exigent circumstances. If you have a real kind of emergency situation, then, you know, you have to deal with it. And what would normally be a constitutional right can be temporarily, I wouldn't even call it infringed, because you have a really, really good reason to, say you saw one of the suspects run into a house, okay?
Right.
You don't have to go get a warrant to get into that house. You know, you have a police have a right, and I would argue an obligation, to go into that house to get that guy. Now, they might want to do it carefully, and they might want to, you know, ring the doorbell, and it's going to be their call. But, you know, the normal rules aren't going to apply in that kind of case. You also have soldiers can't be quartered in a house outside of the emergency situation. It's the Third Amendment, which is kind of an appendage to the Fourth Amendment. And the sort of same principle kind of might apply here. But then a general sweep through a house just to check out something quickly is not the same thing as quartering. So I don't think the Third Amendment applies. Mm-hmm. But the principle is there. If you have a good enough reason, fine. If you don't, then that's another question. And I don't know whether they did. I'm a little suspicious.
Dan in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I've got a question about deterrence. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, moving towards Big Brother watching me more and more, but I guess I'd be a little bit more open to it. You know, there is actually a good reason for it. Do we have any evidence that increased surveillance cameras have a deterrent effect on crime, particularly, you know, violent crime as opposed to, you know, petty crime, speeding, yellow lights, things like that?
Yeah.
And have any studies been done? Will any studies be done? Anything like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can't really answer it. I just don't. The general assumption is that they do deter. Depends on the type of crime. Depends on the type of criminal. But I can't give you a specific answer, but it's a good question.
Yeah, and I guess we could guess that if with more and more coverage that these surveillance cameras are exist.
Well, let me pose this question. Mm-hmm. It's more of a theoretical question that would you want to live in a society without any crime whatsoever because of deterrence? And my answer, personal answer, is no, because that's going to mean that the presence of the state is so omnipresent that everyone's afraid to do anything wrong. And, you know, to some extent, in a free society, you're going to have some crime. The question is, you know, what level is tolerable, et cetera. It's not to excuse the criminals whatsoever. I'm a big responsibility freak. The sort of the flip side of freedom is responsibility. But I don't want a society where the state is so strong that no one would ever imagine wanting to commit a crime, because that's a society that's not going to be free.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Don in Madison is with us now. Hello, Don.
Hello. I just wanted to comment. I've been installing the traffic cameras on the red light running cameras that you mentioned for about 20 years now. Those are not allowed in the state of Wisconsin. Chicago does use them for enforcement. There is no automated enforcement for this video allowed in Wisconsin. That's from traffic cameras or any other types of things. So just a clarification.
Yeah,
most of the cameras are, the cameras were out there, and most of them aren't even recorded that are at these traffic locations.
And I know we've done some shows on this, so because Don's line was breaking up, Don, you're saying that they cannot use these for law enforcement purposes in Wisconsin?
They can't be used for automated enforcement, so you can't ticket just based on the video. There has to be an officer present.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know in Chicago, actually, the yellow light application of these things has actually led to more accidents, because people will come up to a situation where it's ambiguous whether or not the light's yellow or turning red, and they'll slam their brakes on to make sure they're not going to get a ticket, and then people from behind them will slam into them. And so you have this sort of situation where the, you know, the sort of folk ways of society had learned how to deal with yellow to red lights, and then you get the state in there with a sort of rigid rule applied by the camera, and it messes that up.
Yeah. Let's go now to Zach in Appleton. Hi, Zach. What do you think?
I have two comments. I'm not comfortable with the universal surveillance, but it seems very reasonable that for large public events in the name of public safety that they would set them up temporarily. The second comment is, with phones being so common and with Facebook being such a popular media and YouTube to post things, things are already kind of being spaced, and people's faces are getting put out on the Internet without any kind of say or rights to it as well.
Yeah. And wait till we get, you know, face recognition technology becoming more prominent. Then it's going to be, we're going to be even moving further in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, getting back to the public event thing, that's fine. But if it's, say, for a First Amendment kind of protest or activity, then I would like to see some rules in effect as to how that's used, which is similar to what Attorney General Levy did back in the 1970s.
Yeah.
So you accept it, but then you restrain it with the law. Draw the right balance.
Let's go to John in Germantown. Hello, John.
Hello. Well, it's always the promise of security and the illusion of security in exchange for your rights being given up. It never actually materialized, so I'll start there. But when they put in security cameras, do I get to look at them? Because the biggest thing with Big Brother watching is you got to watch them back. And I'd love to look at some of that surveillance footage of the other people with backpacks and stuff and the drill that they were running. I'd love to watch that, but nope, you can't do that. You can't film the police on the road. They can watch us, but we can't watch back, and that'd be my primary objection.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I've seen in Chicago, actually, police go after people that are taking pictures of what they're doing. And, you know, taking the cameras, and I think in one case on WGN News, they actually, it was like out of a movie, they broke the camera.
So in our final moments here, Professor Down, should we just get used to the idea that we're going to have more of these surveillance cameras, or should we not embrace it?
Well, my position, and I've been responding to various callers, is that, yeah, this is happening, but I think we need to be aware of it. And I think we need to be duly vigilant about how we can collectively find ways to employ it where we need to, but then draw the right kind of lines so that we don't, so it doesn't control us, but we end up controlling it for the right reasons.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Donald Downs, Professor of Political Science, Law, and Journalism at UW-Madison, talking with us about surveillance cameras in light of the news that the city of Madison says it plans to install about 100 additional surveillance cameras around town following last week's Boston Marathon bombings and the evidence that these surveillance cameras can help solve crimes. Thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing this hour. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for on-air production. And thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air direction. And thank you for listening. Hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be back, and we will have more housing advice in this week's edition of On Your Money. He'll answer your questions about buying, selling, and renovating your home. Plus, he'll also answer your non-housing personal finance questions. That's On Your Money coming up after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.